Okay. Here we go. Second lecture of 1st of May. And I suppose after that first lecture, some of you will be calling May Day, May Day. But remember, if you do, the response will be, what withhold has been missed on you? I'm going to talk to you about HCO info letter, April 29, 1812. Routine 3G experimental, a preview of a clearing process. The first thing you should know about this is it is complete. That's your first miss on it. You're going to read this, and you're going to be sure that it is incomplete, that there's much more to be known. Because all the comments I've had on this to date, there will be other issues on this material, of course, but all comments I've had is on the basis of additive, additive. What do we do about the additive? You know, somebody says, well, what do you do about all, you know, we got this right away, and everything's fine, and we think this is beautiful, and it straightens out everything. But now, what do you do with the op terms of the items which have already been found? Unfortunate, you see, that it happens to be covered here. You don't do anything with them. You see? Really, if it doesn't say it here, this, of course, doesn't cover precisely model session. It doesn't give you a lot of the procedural actions. But as far as the technology itself is concerned, it is jolly complete. So In studying this, you see, what you should do is read what's here, not add something and worry about it. You can do that. You can add something and then worry about it. And if it isn't here, don't worry about it. That's the first message, you know. You say, well, what about a PC? What about a PC who had a goal? And he had a goal, all right. And they found this terminal, you understand? And the terminal was audited on what have you done to what couldn't have happened with or something. And it was audited that way for 269 hours and so forth. Now, what do we do? It hasn't anything to do with it. It says the way you patch up and go back and backtrack is you check out the goal. It doesn't say a thing about doing anything with the terminal. But we couldn't care less about the terminals. Forget the terminals. Why? A broad survey of everything done on 3D crisscrosses has been done wrong. It's horrible to behold. But it's absolutely my observation. I haven't seen a complete list yet. So I'll tell you, if you want to finish off a 3D crisscross, your best stunt, but this doesn't concern. It gives you the steps of 3D crisscross, but it really doesn't concern itself totally with repatching up 3D crisscross. I can tell you how to patch up 3D crisscross. It's just take the source items, you know. What should be disregarded? You're trying to get something done the fellow had, and he had the pre-have level, God Almighty, and something like this. It doesn't matter. You just take that line and take the original list and complete it. You don't do anything with the terminal. You take the list source, complete it. It's very odd, you know, but you're going to be able to apply these tests. None of these tests would apply to any list you've done yet. It wouldn't apply. Well, just experimentally take any list you have done on a PC. I don't care, even if the item's checked on 3D crisscross. Take the list and just read the first 12 items to the PC and watch the tone arm move. It didn't go down as fundamental as it could have gone, right? So therefore, even though the terminal checks out very nicely and is sitting there very nicely and everything like that, you can still bleed charge off the list. You can get deeper into the goal's problem mass with the same type of list. You can go further every time. And the funny part of it is all the 3D crisscross you have done, of course, has blown charge off the bank. None of it is in vain. Now, the rationale of 3D crisscross is that you went on and found items and op-termed items and found items and op-termed items, and they eventually come down and you get more and more fundamental items. In other words, we're blowing off charge on a gross basis of taking many items, and the charge would eventually bleed off the goal's problem mass. See, that was the rationale of 3D crisscross. Well, this makes PC pretty uncomfortable, experience has shown. Now, we can also get into the goal's problem mass more deeply and more fundamentally by getting a goal. In other words, a goal is a better thing to operate with on each one of the line plot lines to find a goal's problem mass. It's all in the interest of shortening up the auditing. You'll always get a more fundamental item by going off from a goal. Always. It goes deeper. Why does it go deeper? Well, the PC isn't being asked to confront any mass. He's only being asked to confront ideas. And so he can go into the goal's problem mass and he can confront more and more and more ideas. He can wrap around, and of course he's basically confronting the idea in the mass he is stuck in. So a goals list is only asking him to confront ideas, not asking him to confront any masses. And then you turn around, having found that he is trapped on the fourth basement floor. You found this by ideas, you see. Now you get him to list the items, and he'll eventually list the item which surrounds the idea you found. It's all on the basis that it's easier to find the idea than it is to find the mass. PCs will confront ideas endlessly, but will not very often confront masses, which are painful to them. All the technique of war is based upon this fact. Somebody can confront and snarl and quarrel with the ideas of the enemy, and then he walks out and bares his bosom to some mass, shells, flamethrowers, something of that sort, and he loses himself a body. He could argue about their counter-philosophy, you see, all day and all night. You see, he'd still have a body. You know? So he's accustomed to being able to confront ideas. He can argue with ideas. He can confront ideas. He can do this with ideas and that with ideas and so forth. Do almost anything but change his idea. And therefore, in the goal's problem mass, in racking around, the person is, of course, confronting more intimately the idea which is insisted in the terminal, which he is actually in. He can confront that, and he can tell you what that is without being able to tell you what the mass terminal, see, what the mass of the terminal is, or identify the terminal. He can tell you about the ideas of a terminal before he can tell you about the terminal. You see that? So therefore, a goal's entrance, taking the goal as your departure point each time, reaches more fundamentally and more deeply into the GPM. This is the theory of it. And now, having reached the goal of this mass, why, of course, you go ahead and identify the item. And the item you identify will have that goal. And that's all there is to it. Now that he's identified it, however, he's got it differentiated and separated. He thought many things had this goal, but only one thing had the goal that he listed. You got down to the bottom of the pot, and of course there he was, and he's mixed up with this item. It's a mass. You know, he's in the middle of that bowling ball, not in the other 500. And the reason the bowling ball is hung up is, of course, it is opposed against another bowling ball, and which has exactly opposite ideas. Now, by op-terming the item which you have finally found, of course, it is hoped, and this is theoretical and experimental, of course, it is hoped that these two bowling balls will just go, and that'll be the end of that. Because it's fantastic that they could be suspended in space and time and be so timeless because they happened so long ago. How are they still there? It's a freak. The GPM is composed of these accidentals. And there are not very many of them that are poised. It's something like, how do you take a boulder as big as a two-story house and balance it upon the exact pinnacle of a windblown mountain peak? You know, if you could stand there for a long time and study this and say, how the hell is that thing balanced there, you know? It couldn't happen. See? Well, down basically in the Gold's problem mass, how could you'd get such an exact balance between a terminal and an octerm that they hang up in equal force and perpetuate themselves for trillennia? Man, that takes some doing. You mean you found a water buck who is just as strong as a tiger, and a tiger who is just as strong as a water buck, and a water buck who has just exactly these antagonistic ideas to a tiger that make the tiger's antagonistic ideas to a water buck hang up. And now that hangs up in time, and the PC is still creating it. It's still persevering. It is still hung. If he was just had an identity and he was still creating this identity, he long since would have ceased to create it. There isn't anything for a reason for him to go on creating it. He's just saying it must survive. Well, that's kind of odd. Well, of course it survived, and now it isn't surviving. Now, why must it survive? Well, it must survive because it is opposed. It is always opposed, so it always must survive. How the devil did he arrange that in his reactive bank? That's marvelous, you know. You get down and figure out, how in the name of God could you have these two cannonballs fired from peak one and peak two directly at each other with the exact balanced velocity that they hit each other exactly in midair? Yeah, you see, that would be an artillery freak to end all artillery freaks. I think in World War One, in the whole of World War One, they eventually found an unexploded shell that had been hit by another shell. It had a shell in the side of it. Everybody thinks this is marvelous. As a matter of fact, it's in a museum someplace over in France. I don't know how many billions of bullets and shells were fired in World War One, at what close range. And almost never did one shell hit another shell. Well, it's just that kind of thing. And all these billions of lives and identities a person's had, how does he have one that hangs up against another one? That exactly, so that afterwards it will accumulate other identities and then accumulate other balances and accumulate and accumulate. And he's still, weirdly enough, creating all of these things simultaneously. And so, well, you just couldn't do it. Just get the idea right now of creating simultaneously 585 different identities. All the same minute, each with all of its own particular. Well, you're doing it. Well, how do you do it? Well, that's because there's just a couple down at the bottom of it, and that's what you're creating. And the rest of these things, of course, just accumulate and accumulate and accumulate, and of course, they don't uncreate. You got the theory back to this. Well, therefore, it is of interest in terms of, one, shortness of auditing time, and two, PC comfort, to achieve the most fundamental grip that you can get on the Gold's problem mass as soon as you can get it. In other words, the earliest grip, the deepest grip, the earliest. This is what you're trying to do. You're trying to get there mostest with the firstest. And when you got that, why, of course, you're that much closer to doing something about it. Now, there's a couple of phenomena which have been observed. And one of them is that later on, after proper terminals have been found, and goals and terminals have been found in routine three, that later on you get nothing but constant blow of terminals. In other words, you try to find terminals for that goal, and you no more than find them, and they blow. And then eventually you'll take a goal, and you no more than find the goal, and it'll blow. Some of you have seen this happen. Some of you experienced it. Now, I'm trying here with this approach to move that phenomenon right up to the beginning of clearing. See, so we're doing nothing but blowing and we're never auditing. Okay. We're never auditing a process on these things. Just knock out auditing the process and just do it all by assessment. Well, that's the definite theoretical approach to this thing, and that's what's hoped for. All right, we know definitely that these things do blow. Well, all right. Let's move that up to the beginning of the case instead of experiencing it at the end. That's the effort here. And the other one is this, that a PC never feels better than when he has his goal and his first terminal. He just feels marvelous. And many of you will agree with that. That's a marvelous sensation to have those two things beautifully and accurately spotted and everything is fine. You feel great. Well, now the second that you find a modifier, and the second you find an opposition terminal, you really never feel worse. You've had it right there at that point. Well, now why is this? It's because you are coming away from the goals problem mass in old routine 3 clearing. You see, we're trying to push routine 3 clearing straight on through the goals problem mass, and there's no relapse of clearing. We're trying to push it through the lot. So that you don't get a keyed out clear state, that you get a clear state that is absolutely straight through. All right. Now, the modifier apparently has a lot to do with the op term. So why find it? You're going to find the op term in due sequence anyhow, and it'll have to do with the modifier anyway, so why bother with it? It is associated with, I'm not saying that it is, but it's associated with the op term. In other words, you find this terminal, you find this goal, you find this terminal. All right, it's the opposition terminal to the terminal you find that is going to turn up with the modifier. So the second we find the goal, if we then find the modifier, we key in the goal's problem mass and key it in hard. Well, there's theoretically an easier way to key in the goal's problem mass, and that is simply by finding the op term itself without finding any modifier. Because we don't need the modifier in order to find the op term. We're going to find the op term by a complete listing. Now, therefore, we've blown a piece off the GPM of magnitude. Now, if we find a new goal, and we find a terminal for this new goal, and then we op-term it, we again snap the PC back in against the GPM, but we do it gently, and what we're doing is consistently chipping chunks off the GPM while clearing the person, and theoretically, he shouldn't hit these heavy, steep dives. Now, these items, when they start disintegrating and so forth, are hot and cold and electrical, and they're quite an experience. And you can get somebody on a hot summer day shivering so his teeth rattle. These things are cold, man. Why are they cold? Well, why are they painful? Why are they this? Why are they that? Well, there's a lot of reasons. But to get an electrical standing wave into that condition takes some doing. It's hard to do. And it's got to be intolerably cold and intolerably hot and intolerably electrical, and actually has to be all those three things to hang up. That's why they all don't hang up. The person who's living his present life in Southern California at this time is really never too hot and really never too cold, you see. And if they stay away from the mains plugs, why, they're seldom too electrical. So if you were to go back in the future and find this life in Southern California at all, it would simply be because it was hung up and associated with or keyed into a GPM that was too item that was too hot and too cold and too electrical. In this lifetime, none of you have frozen to death. You haven't. You've been pretty cold, but none of you have frozen to death. I guarantee that. The best proof is you're here. None of you have ever burned up. Well, you've been singed around the edges here and there. No, but the fact that you're sitting here right now shows that in this lifetime you haven't burned up. And you haven't been killed by heavy voltage. because in this lifetime you're still alive. But you have lived many lives, I assure you, in which you did freeze to death, and in which you did burn up, and got shocked in the bargain. It must have been fun. You take a doll body, for instance, you consider rather precious. It goes 200 centigrade in a minus 175 centigrade. And you thought it was your old pal Bill as you walked around the corner. And it wasn't. It was a fourth invader, and at that moment you got, oh, a few megawatts in the brisket. That kind of thing, don't you think? You were minding your own business in this civilization and everything was fine and somebody dumped an atom bomb on you. See? That's the kind of thing this sort of thing takes. It takes duresses of magnitude. Now you sit here and you know the limitations of the body you've got, and you know that if it temperature drops to 55, you shiver, and if it goes to 82, why, you start getting too warm. There's not much of a margin here, don't you think? And somebody slips you 240 British volts, you say, yipe. You say, that's a lot of jolt. 240 volts of jolt. Nonsense. I was holding on to 240 volts the other day. Mostly had muscular kick to the thing. But with this body, I don't think I would take it up as a pastime. But you get hit sometime with about 2 or 3 million volts, and you'll see the difference. As Gormley Castle used to be down here, I was riding over to a tourney one day and was half armed in a rainstorm. Half steel armor on in a rainstorm. Rest of it slung on the back of the horse. Brother with me and a groom, and they had the rest of the armor. And say, help me. Lightning it. And, you know, armor on wet ground makes the most marvelous conductor. Knocked me plumb silly, it did. Plumb silly. It's happened to me several times. But it's always you go sit down after a while and you say, oh, no, you know. You think about it. It preys on your mind. That's something that it upsets you. It makes you absent-minded. It makes you flinch. And so forth. I remember at that particular instance, I rode right on to the castle, and the grooms went out and got the bodies. And brother was still alive, but the groom was awful dead. And laid my body in the bed. I stood there, you know, and thought that was okay, and went back over to Europe. And walked in, and it shows you, a guy goes, I walked in, and I fell over the old mither who was busy scrubbing the floor, and of course, wet floor, you know, and God, volts were coming off me like that, you know. And I step in her scrub bucket and walk through her, and she gets a hell of a shock, you know, and she says, coo, what's that, you know, words to that effect, and go over to the table and sit down at the table and pick up my fist and look around, and there's no mead, you know, a little bit, about $14.95, something like that. And so I pick up my fist, and I start to say, God or Damarung, bring me in some mead, you know, and I go bang, you know, my fist goes straight through the table. And I say, wait a minute, boy. Oh, no. I'm dead. Bright moonlight night, and there's a dog howling outside. So I walk out in the moonlight and decide for the next 55 years I'll have to be a ghost. It was a very shocking experience. That you could get discombobulated and upset and not know what you're doing. I didn't. I went and picked up a baby or two. But anyhow, the point is it takes a lot more than you're even aware of confronting in order to pick up electronic masses and then keep mocking them up because, you see, they're so dangerous, because you have to keep them mocked up, you see, because they're so dangerous, you see. It's very logical. If you didn't keep them there, they're liable to get away, you see, and blow your head off, you know. So therefore, you have to keep them created. You figure it out. You're the one that's been doing it, mostly. But you see, if you didn't have that mass, then some other mass would get you. Well, now, when you figure out that this particular incident I've been telling you about, which I consider rather amusing, I'm going to have to go down to Gormley Castle one of these days and look and see if the old tilt field is still down there and so forth. I better not tell any of the Englishmen about it because they just raise hell around there. Committed enough overts that one day I was riding through there and about 1600 fell off the back of my horse, stone dead. Overt motivator sequence caught up just like that. There's no mass connected with that lightning. That's free track. You got an idea what I'm talking about? Okay. Well, look, if that's free track, what the hell is one of these masses? Only that way. Of course, earlier on the track, you had more horsepower. And you could keep more mocked up. You could stand up to more, so the violence is pretty terrific. And a PC hits these things and he turns ice cold on the masses. And you keep telling you how cold he is and turn on the fire and God, you look at your watch and find out it's 90. And you see all of a sudden he gets roaring, red hot. He is awful hot. Terribly warm. But the odd part of it is he less often gets warm than he gets cold because he's used the warmth of the mass time and time again. He's bled the warmth off of it, don't you see? But the coldness is less motional. So what's left as residue is the most motional mass, so he's more likely to be cold. Now, he also gets electric whiz-whizzes going around one way or the other. You call these things somatics. And they'll become odd patches of some kind. Well, that's all the GPM in its manifestations. Now, the more gently you can pick this thing apart, the more comfortable the PC is. You can also drive the PC through it as though you were a Sherman tank leaving L-alamine. But it can be done, don't you think? But you get dented fenders. It's one of those things, you know. And it can be sufficiently dressed. Well, it wouldn't do anything drastic to your PC, but he gets very uncomfortable. Now, 3D crisscross, shortlisted, improperly itemed, opterm the wrong way too, and so forth, turns on such phenomena as ice cold, red hot, and all you can't really bring yourself to go over and touch the light switch because it's liable to leap at you. You're sure of that. So all of these data add up to the fact that we want a faster gain, more comfortably for the PC. Now, the more sectionally you pick off the term and opterm of the GPM, the more comfortable the PC is going to be in the process. Okay? Elementary, so far. Right? But there's some more gains that come with it. And that is that you're going straight through the clear because you'll be picking up the hearts of the masses in which the PC is stuck, most reliably. And you're going straight through and your improved gain will come out at the other end. Whereas that's not true of 3D crisscross. 3D crisscross is a roller coaster. Sometimes your lines are right and sometimes your lines are a bit off. And nevertheless, you're making it, but at what cost? Sometimes, you see, an auditor can be dead wrong in this. Auditor can get awful knuckleheaded about this kind of thing. The funny part of it is, and that apparently, and this has to be borne out, that errors in 3D crisscross are probably most remediable by rerunning routine 3 as 3G. Let's say you picked up who or what have you liked. You got no tone arm action. You listed a short list, nulled it out with 25 repetitions of each item. ARC broke the PC into having only one item left and put that down and then opt-termed it. Or you find out that this is less fundamental in the GPM, and when you get a goal, theoretically, when you get a goal and you find its terminals, all of a sudden these others will blow off as locks. You'll run into these errors sooner or later and plow them out with a routine 3G. Now, what we have needed in doing routine 3s, let's go into whys. What we have needed is for the auditor to know how to do it before he'd done it. And that has been very nearly impossible. Because the weak end, the difficult end, the end he's going to have trouble with is the end he starts on, i.e. a goals list. Goals lists are hard to do. Because this person's goals have always been invalidated, and because the GPM is only hung up because the goal has been invalidated, the invalidations of goals is almost the common denominator, is one of the common denominators of every item in the goals problem mass. And the common denominator of it, of course, attracts the overt motivator of it. And you're sitting there and you dare look cross-eyed while you're reading off, "I want to wear hats." You see, you say, "I want to wear hats." And you all of a sudden look a little odd for a second, and that invalidates that. You see? And the PC, you've got a missed withhold right there, and there we go. You can list hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of goals with the rudiments out, and you can null and scrunch and batter and with the rudiments out and rough audit and so forth around trying to find a goal. Now, we've had a number of units over in the States and in Australia and so forth which were trying to find goals on one another, and they were making it within about 6 weeks on some of them. It was an heroic performance. It was rough. But it was only rough because the auditors were rough. We were having to train the auditor to do it on something that can only be done if the auditor's perfect. That gets idiotic, isn't it? It's one of these things you only get one chance. You can bust a PC up 8 ways from the middle, and it takes a real expert to put the PC back together again. You string this wire from the Empire State Building to the Chrysler Building, and you hand the person, the auditor, a wobbly-wheeled bicycle. And you see, he's never had any other wire. There's never been any wire on the ground. As a matter of fact, he's never even had a bicycle on the ground, you see. And you say, "Okay, son, now just ride along that wire over to the Chrysler Building. You'll find it's very easy." And, you know, he shakes. He does. He and very often picks himself off of Madison Avenue or somewhere as a spot. I'd say 95% of the time he picked himself off the lower avenue as a grease spot. They just don't do it. You say, "Find the goal." See, it takes terrifically smooth, letter-perfect auditing. Where's he had a chance to accumulate a routine 3 perfectly smooth, letter-perfect activity? Well, he hasn't in the past, but he can now because we can do a routine 3D crisscross, and he can make mistakes, makes PCs uncomfortable, and find out what complete lists are and how the meter operates, and get practice running model sessions, getting off missed withholds and invalidations and making everything run at once, and he feels less like a one-man band who's had its arms and legs cut off. He can get used to it. So the PC blows his stat a few times. All right, let him find out how to patch things up with missed withholds. He's doing a lousy job, the auditor is, but still the PC finds out eventually, "Hey, what do you know? I found the wrong item and opt-termed it and so on. I picked up the missed withholds and the PC said it was all right." What do you know about this? You know? He gets on top of auditing. Prep checking is a good school to learn how to do the meter and so forth, but it still doesn't prepare you all the way to go through all of the one-man band actions of finding a list and nulling it and finding the item and checking it out and all that. It just doesn't. That's a specialized activity. Well, you got 3D crisscross, which in itself is quite valid as an activity, if done right. Just let the person go on. Now, the best way to get somewhere near the GPM is with the pre-half scale. The pre-half scale will get you shallowly near the GPM. A goal will get you much closer into the GPM, you see. But a goal is not something you're going to let the fellow tamper with till he learns how, see. So we're going to eliminate our little lady can't go swimming till he learns how out of this thing, you see. And turn the auditor loose on 3D crisscross. We have a perfectly valid process then, which can be used as a training procedure, which I think is wonderful. Because there's really no difference to nulling a goals list than nulling any other list. There is no real difference, except that the goals list is fantastically vulnerable to invalidation and bad auditing. It requires tremendously adroit listing and handling. Well, the toughness of the a 3D crisscross list will stand up to it. You've only got one chance at the PC's goals list. Of course, you've got lots of chances at 3D crisscross masses. You can get item after item, you see. You understand now that if you get the right pre-half scale, that's the auxiliary pre-half scale, if you get a right level, if you list that properly, if you get the practice of completing the list, and then opterming it and completing that list and so on, you're liable to get a blow occasionally. I mean, a blow with the two items. It's liable to be all smooth as grease. But if you missed, you're just going to make the PC uncomfortable. Put a liability. You haven't done any irremediable harm, because you could probably either straighten out that you did wrong, or eventually you take the PC over into routine 3G type of assessment and it blows the whole thing out. In other words, all those items and everything are all going to be appended to this and that and the other thing, and that's all going to blow out anyway. So you've got a remedy which is below the level of intermediate remedies. So you can teach somebody to do 3D crisscross and the case will make progress and everything is fine and so forth. You get a chance to look at them sadly and say, well, Betty, do you think five items is going to make a complete list, you know? See if you can get six. And the auditor is saying, 400 or 500 items on a list? How could you ever get through that many items? I mean, look at the paper, you know, and gosh, you know, well, goals list of 600 or 700 goals, well, so what? You get to that point finally where he's used to doing lists and so on. It doesn't matter how long list. You take a 600 goal list. So what? Okay. That's nothing. Null it down, not ARC, break it out. And null it down and goes astray, put it back together again, hook it up right and so forth. In other words, he's able to do it now. He's able to swim after he has learned how. He's able to ride this bicycle from the Empire State Building to the Chrysler Building quite easily, since he's been riding it only a couple of feet above the ground for some time. See? That's just the difference of approach. We're very rich in having a training process which gets benefits for the PC, and which will only make the PC too cold or too hot or too damned electrical. Oh, it'll sometimes turn on a chronic somatic and the PC will go around with an awful cold. Easily explained, because of course everybody is having a cold these days. And you get a mass half in out of his ear or something of the sort, and he has a horrendous earache. Well, try to keep him from going and seeing the osteopath or something. He's not suffering from oral lumbosis. He's simply suffering from... all he's suffering from is the wrong item opt-termed complicated with missed withholds. That's actually all he's suffering from. Well, the end product of this is a trained auditor and a working procedure. Now, you'd be surprised how adroit you have to be to get a goal. Only when you can do listing easily, do a complete list, nice complete list, and get all the items properly off of it, and find the final item and off-term that nicely. When you can go through all those operations, it becomes very easy to take a complete list of goals and go down the line and knock that off. But you will find even then that it requires a little more adroitness. Goals go out like that. Before you... Well, prep checking gets you heavy reads. You're very often a quarter of a dial on a fall, you see, and sometimes even a dial. And I've seen stuff struck on an E-meter which was 16 consecutive dial drops. So there's heavy dial. All right. Now, on 3D crisscross, you get used to reading something that may be as little as a quarter of a division. Tiny little division like that. And a goal can very well come out reading a 32nd of a division. We're reading with the microscope. Can read very little. And go in and out, just bing, bang, bing, bang, bing, bang. Just in and out like that. It's reading very nicely. You're saying to sell apples. Is there an invalidation on this? Ping. All right, what was that? All right, thank you very much. Have I missed a withhold on you? Oh, yes. Well, thank you. All right, thank you. I missed a withhold. That's clean. Yeah, all right, fine. To sell apples. Is there an invalidation? Man, it's like sorting yourself through the labyrinth, you know? You got to be pretty good. Before, with any routine three process, you took an auditor totally green and you threw him into the soup, and the PC went into the soup right after it. 1,315, they still haven't found the PC's goal. How we ever found any is miraculous. Now, therefore, routine 3G is 3G because of goals. It's a routine 3 employing goals. But it also employs several different principles. And the principle is that listing is auditing, and that we're going to do our auditing by listing. So we cut out the impatience of it all. Well, let's find something so we can audit it. This we're not interested in. The listing is the auditing. When we find the item, we're going to op-term it. And when we op-term it, we hope, if all is well, that we will get a small ping. And perhaps we will. This is still susceptible to a bit of speculation. Perhaps we'll get a bit of... Perhaps this is becoming variable. And we get ping in the op term. We found it. And then all of a sudden, we can't find it. And there's no charge on the op term list. And we can't find the terminal. And we can't find the goal. And, of course, we turn right back and find a new goal, a new terminal, a new op term. Just that repetitive cycle. That's the cycle we hope for. We'll try everything we can to make that come true. But here's this listing is auditing as a principle, and it's a brand new principle, so you shouldn't really care how long your list is. But that your lists are so long, remember, don't lose your speed and adroitness. You've got to be able to list rapidly and handle the PC rapidly and keep the rudiments in rapidly, and all these things have to be done. Otherwise, this becomes an activity of months and months and months because you're handling tremendous numbers of items. So you have to pick up the adroitness and facility by which you can sit down and list 300 items, keep the PC talking, keep the missed withholds off, so the three-quarters of the session isn't blown because the PC's boiling off. You can even knock out a comm lag, probably, with Mist Withhold. And you're not stopping the PC all the time, you know, and you'll get down to where you develop the knack of making a PC give you a list, staying broad awake and giving you a list and plowing right on down the line. Well, that'd make good auditing. And then you get the knack of testing. How do you test this thing? How do you find out if it is complete and so forth? How do you get used to that? And now nulling it ought to be as easy as pie. A list ought to go out bzzzt. When you're able to do all that, mop term it and all that sort of thing, when you're able to do that with 3D crisscross, when you get over to 3G, you'll find out that it isn't all that easy to get that goals list. That's all right. The PC can write it out of session and all that sort of thing, and you can complete it in session, and you can go through those ramifications, but you find out it's far more susceptible to shift and invalidation, and it's greasier. It's greasier. Now it's here, and now it isn't here. It's more susceptible to sporadic reads and all of that kind of thing. And you spend more time as there an invalidation on this item. And thank you. Now I'll check that again. Is there invalidation on this item? That's clear. Thank you very much. All right, and now you go ahead with the item and so forth, and all of a sudden, you've gotten a needle pattern. Have I missed a withhold on you? You see, you pick up the missed withhold. Thank you very much. Needle pattern disappears. I'll ask that again. If I missed a withhold on you, that's clear. Thank you. And you go on from there, don't you? You work at it. And it takes requires a pretty slippery auditor in order to get a goal easily and hold it there. This is what I've learned about routine three activities. Routine 3 was never defeated by its own successfulness, or its own potential, its own technology. The technical facts of Routine 3 are still technically accurate. They are there. What defeated Routine 3 was lousy metering, incomplete model sessions. We didn't have all of the rudiments necessary. We didn't have missed withholds to hold the thing in session. We didn't have the Mark IV meter, tremendous item there, all in one piece. We had meters that were reading electronically, but were not reading the mind. It was marvelous, you know. And we didn't have a lot of things that we have now in order to punch this thing along. And basically, we hadn't grooved in and insisted on the auditor doing a perfect procedure. And now today we can say what a perfect procedure is, and an auditor can do a perfect procedure, so therefore Routine 3 would be as workable today as it ever had. But Routine 3 did have one technical liability, is that you could tip into the goals problem mass and then separate one item off the goals problem mass and then blow it out sideways, and you'd get a key out without having approached the remainder of the goals problem mass. Well, by op-terming, we continually prevent this from happening without caving the PC in. So this thing has become feasible. Auditing this is very simple, and all I actually expect an auditor to know how to do perfectly is his TRs, model session, his e-metering, and to know exactly what he's supposed to do as he comes down the line with listening and testing and so forth. That's all. There's not very much in actual fact. If he can do these things perfectly, then he can read a meter perfectly. He'll soon get used to finding out what an invalidation looks like and what it doesn't look like and what a needle pattern that suddenly turns on looks like and how to turn it off. He'll learn all of these things rather easily. Then learning through routine 3D crisscross how to handle this. Why, he should then be able to turn over to the tartar of all tartars, goals lists, and be able to find a PC's goal and really sail. That's the approach. We're rich in a tremendous amount of technology. Basically, if we had just used the technology or been able to use the technology we had when we were doing Routine 3, that would have been quite successful too. But not realizing the amount of flub there was on the existing technology, of course, I went for broke. And straighten out all the rudiments, and he got a complete model size and figured out all the elements and added up anything that could go wrong and what caused ARC breaks, and, you know, just solved a tremendous number of technical problems in order to make them out straight. This ought to be like falling off a log, if you learn how to do it. And doesn't require any freak solutions. You don't have to get very imaginative about this. But you have to be very precise, and you have to audit the PC that's there, right there in front of you. That's the PC you audit. If you do all of that, why, you make a good show of it. There's no sense in trying to do any of these things if you're still having trouble with a meter. Obviously. If you're still gagging on model session, if your TRs are wildly out, if you don't know how to conduct a two-way comm, if you inevitably says, well, I don't know, yes, I do have a present time problem. I had a fight with my mother this morning. And you say, what was the fight about? And you wonder why you never get any place with a cage, see? At these little things. And it's being able to audit the PC who is sitting right there in front of you, be very careful and double check everything, you know. You're not quite sure that the US, is there an invalidation on that item, you know, and let me check that again. Is there an invalidation on that item? All right, that's clear. Okay. In other words, an auditor at first gets terribly obsessed with making an awfully good show of it. You know? Something like the drum majorettes from the University of San Antone, you know, or something. He's going to make a terribly good show of it, and anything to do with PC, you know. But he's going to make an awfully good show of it, and he knows he's only supposed to ask once, he thinks, you know. And he's now I'm supposed to catch up with him. And he'll actually fake through. You know, he says, well, if I missed a withhold on you, oh, thank you. That's clear. And he thinks that it'd look awfully clumsy on his part, or revelatory or something, if he said, have I missed a withhold on you? I'll repeat that. Have I missed a withhold on you? Oh, well, yeah. All right. What's that? He didn't catch it the first time. He thinks he's so anxious to look good that he stinks. You got somebody coming into session there, man, you can just hear the high tension going through his power lines, you know? And anything to do with PC. And all of a sudden, then he finds out he can ride the bicycle. And after that, while he audits the PC in front of him, he does it rapidly, he does it well, he knows what he's doing, and so on. But we've got the processes necessary by which he can integrate his knowledge without killing the PC, and who knows, he might even someday do the PC some good. So that's quite valuable to have a training routine for a senior routine. And it's what we've needed for some time. I'm very happy about it. I don't say that routine 3G will remain exactly as it is under the gun and under inspection as you've done it, because you haven't yet begun to make mistakes. That's always a necessary part of it, you know. You haven't yet begun to make mistakes. There are certain things will get explained. The only thing I try to have happen is let's not have to explain so many things that nobody can recognize routine 3G when we get through. See? That often happens. I found out that auditors, in doing lists, so very often, short list, so very often pick up a sporadic reading item that it is the commonplace, not the oddity. It is the commonplace for an item that is finally found to be reading 3 times out of 8. 3 times out of 5, I'll be kinder. Well, I've got the item, yes, it reads. Reads every... Well, it's because, of course, he has overts on you, instructor. The reason it didn't check out is actually I didn't really
Feeney's over, it's off on you. It's all clean with me, you see. And so it worked out with me all right, you see. But when you checked him out, then you see the rudiments were out with you. And that's why it was reading sporadically, you know. That's all part of the auditor trying to look good. After he ceases to try so doggone hard to look good, which is symptomatic of the process of learning, and then, he starts all of a sudden to do a whale of a job. It all it counts to him is not whether he looks good or not. It's whether or not the item is the item. That's what's important. It's whether or not the list was complete. It's whether or not the op term fitted. It's whether or not the PC wound up at the end of session bright and sassy. You see, all these things are the important things to him. But he gets out the importances first. And of course, the first important part of training is to get the standard action of being able to sit there and look at the E-meter down. You know, sit there and look at the E-meter without putting yourself on the cans instead of the PC or something like that. You know? I had a wonderful session today. It was the PC held the cans. And we got the session really started. 11 o'clock at night, and it's still going, but we got the session really started. I really got him in session, you know, big game. Big win. This PC was willing to talk to me after the session. This is the first time this ever happened to me as an auditor. You know, wins. Wins of various kinds. I'm not really being sarcastic. Auditing can get that grim. Auditing is terribly simple. There is a response for every situation that you can get into in auditing today that will get you out of that situation. We are not grasping in the dark, and we don't require freak solutions. It isn't now that we're trying to wind everybody up like dolls, but we've actually got it there, and when the auditor gets certain that he has the answers, he can sit there in a relaxed frame of mind, and he really sees things, and he really audits, and everything whizzes. Auditing, by the way, around the world is succeeding. It's much better, infinitely better, after a year of training here at St. Hill than it has ever been in the past, without any slightest doubts whatsoever. And the St. Hill graduates who've gone back home and raised hell, for the most part, have brought tremendous gains in auditing. And the stuff coming through on the lines today, the reports coming back from HGCs and so on, are much superior to what they have been in the past. But there's still tremendous room for improvement. And, of course, you're the crew that will bring the next big surge of improvement. So work well on it. Thank you.